Hey, everybody. I just wanted to come on and give a little precursor for this episode because we are talking about food, nutrition, different fun conspiracy theories around those topics. And I know that you already know this because you're a beautiful, well-adjusted, media-literate listener of mine, but don't take any of what I say too seriously. Just don't. The whole point of this episode is that no matter what you're looking at when it comes to this topic, whether it is a food pyramid that the government has paid for, or whether it's Tom Brady talking about nightshade vegetables, the whole point that I want to get across is do your own research. Don't ever listen to one person, especially if that person is me. I have to be honest. I'm so uninformed about this that I couldn't even tell you who to go to for information. JoJo Siwa, Mr. Bean, my gynecologist. Like, I actually don't even know. So don't take any of what I say scientifically to fact. Just know that this is going to be a fun episode diving into some of these conspiracy theories around food, and I hope you enjoy it. Hello, hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Fluently Forward. I am so excited for today's episode because you guys picked a conspiracy episode. Ooh, like I'm jumping for joy. We did a little poll over on Instagram, which if you don't follow me on there, I don't blame you. To be honest, I don't really post that many pictures of myself. I post about fighting with my squirrel. Like there's this squirrel that hangs out by my house, and I swear to God, I think that it's evil. So honestly, good on ya. But for the people who do, it was between this or a Zendaya mini deep dive. So that was second place. We did that over on Patreon as a bonus episode. But for today, you guys picked food conspiracy theories. And there's a million and a half. I mean, I actually think this could be an entire podcast like on its own, but maybe we'll do a series here if you guys like it. I mean, there's so many different theories from seed oil thoughts that people have to stories of people not being able to digest bread or wheat in the States, but they can when they travel to Europe. I even heard a story from a friend of a friend that he is allergic to bell peppers, but he can eat them over in Europe, which kind of makes you go, what the fuck is happening here in America? Different nightshades theories, how some celebrities like Tom Brady and Giselle don't eat eggplants and mushrooms. And like, there's a million and a half really cool theories, some of them conspiratorial, some of them just kind of like internet gossip and fun old wives tales. So we are going to dive into some of the fun theories around food today. And let me know what you think about some of these topics, or if there's any other food topics that you would want in another episode, because I can already tell you, I want to do a part two already. So we are going to start things off with one of my favorite honest to God conspiracy theories. This is one of the things that I bring up when I'm at a, you know, ruining a dinner party and somebody's like, all conspiracy theories are crazy. I always hit them with this. I go, let's talk about the food pyramid. Okay, I think you all remember that food pyramid that was built by the aliens. No, don't worry. I'm talking about the nutritional food pyramid that was plastered on posters in the cafeteria where you ate lunch in elementary school. I remember we had different like placemats growing up, and I think the food pyramid was on some of them, which by the way, are kids nowadays still looking at educational placemats? Because when I was a kid growing up and we had family dinner, our placemats, I should talk to my mom about this, but they would be like different presidents all throughout time. And it would also be like a map of the states. So that way, you know, you could learn a little bit as you're also eating. It was like educational placemats. But it was so funny because I do remember the placemat that we had of the presidents. It said who died in office. And, you know, I was just like an idiot kid. And I remember saying to my mom one day, I was like, it's crazy because you would have thought that the first guy they shot in his office, they would have really buffed out the security and like protected the door to the office. Like, I can't believe all of these celebrities or presidents are like dying at their desk in office. Yeah. And then I found out what that phrase meant later. You don't come to the podcast to get educated. You come here for gossip and fun. So a little bit about that. But yeah, the food pyramid was everywhere growing up. And this was, you know, granted, I was a millennial. So this was like 90s. 2000s, 2010s, and it wasn't until recently that it was found out that that food pyramid that we all trusted and was created and enforced and kind of spread around by these different government agencies, which we're going to get into, it's not a correct representation. And different food groups and categories in that food pyramid basically paid their way to be misrepresented on the food pyramid, so that way we would basically buy and eat more of it. So the food pyramid itself was actually first published in Sweden in 1974. It came to the United States. It was introduced by the United States Department of Agriculture, the USDA, in 1992, and it was called the Food Guide Pyramid or the Eating Right Pyramid. Then they changed it in 2005 to My Pyramid, and then they changed it to My Plate in 2011. And you know what it looks like, but for anybody who doesn't, it's just a big stacked pyramid, and at the bottom is a huge area of what you should be eating the most. Bread, cereal, rice, and pasta. They say you should be getting 6 to 11 servings. Above that, so keep in mind, like, it is so crazy to think back on that. They really were trying to tell us that bread, cereal, rice, and pasta is the biggest, you should be getting the most servings of this. I wish it was true. I really do. You guys know how much I love butter noodles. But anyway, then the serving above that, they said vegetables and fruit, you know, fruit 2 to 4 servings, vegetables 3 to 5. Above that, they said milk, yogurt, and cheese, 2 to 3 servings. And then they had meat, poultry, fish, dry beans, eggs, and nuts as 2 to 3 servings, which I feel like this is kind of the protein section, but it's interesting that they categorize eggs with beans, with nuts, you know, it's just, there's so many different, and this is what I learned when I was vegan, there's so many different sources of protein that aren't just strictly meat, but it seems like protein, which is so important in the diet, they have at the very tippy top of the pyramid, 2 to 3 servings, then at the, you know, pinnacle of the pyramid, the eye of it, fats, oils, and sweets used sparingly, and this was the very first created pyramid. And when I say first created, I mean in the United States, because I feel like that was the one that got the most popular. So back to our little history lesson here. Like I said, it was first created in Sweden. And do you want to know why? It was because of high food prices in 1972. So Sweden had the National Board of Health and Welfare, and they, you know, figured out, oh my God, we're having these really high food prices. What do we do to kind of calm the public to make sure that people are eating and planning adjustingly because of this? So they developed this idea of basic foods that were both cheap and nutritious, and then supplemental foods that add a little bit of nutrition that's missing from the basic foods. So they had a pyramid where at the base, they actually had milk, cheese, margarine, bread, cereals, and potatoes, the cheap food. Then above that, they had supplemental vegetables and fruit. And then at the top, they had supplemental meat, fish, and egg. And that was how they created it, which is really interesting because this is the very first graphic that we have, not of what the optimal diet should be. And I do find it interesting, right? Also the idea of carbon emissions, right? Like, should we be eating fruit from areas that we could never be traveling to? All of these people who don't eat local, but we also don't eat seasonally. Like, I always find that crazy. Like, I'm eating bananas year round. Are we meant to be eating bananas? Who knows? We're also, you know, we're also not meant to be sitting on a toilet, but I like doing that. So anyway, that was the first pyramid created in Sweden, and it was because of the high food prices. And what's also interesting is that when they came up with this pyramid shape, somebody said, you know, I think instead of a pyramid, we should do a cake, like a circle, and we should have 7 different slices, and then the size of those slices can tell people how much of that, you know, food they should be eating. And of course, because we're going to have a bunch of different food industries competing at each other's throats, they didn't want to do that. They thought it was problematic because it was going to resemble a cake. And then, you know, maybe it would kind of encourage people to be eating cake, which isn't one of the food groups. So anyway, after Sweden put out this food pyramid, they developed them in other Scandinavian countries, as well as West Germany, Japan, and Sri Lanka. And then the US developed their own food pyramid in 1992. So we were actually like the 10th country to get on board with this. I always just kind of assumed it was created here. So in 1992, when this idea first came to the US, it actually seemed like a pretty good idea. It was the World Health Organization, and they were working in conjunction with the Food and Agriculture Organization. And they put together this entire chart, this like very wordy, hard to read table. And then that table was kind of modified a little bit to create the food pyramid. But it seemed like the table was very legit. And in that table, they didn't just have like milk, cheese, cereal. They had fruits and vegetables, a sodium chloride amount, trans fatty acids, these things called N3 PUFAs. So it wasn't like the fun pyramid that we know of today with like pasta and rice, you know, these actual foods. Instead, they were kind of breaking down the ingredient that you need, and it was a lot more scientific. So that was kind of, you know, it seemed like it had good intentions and it seemed like a good idea, right? Like, here's some nutritional facts. Why don't we present it in a fun, easy to read, maybe put it on a placemat type of way? And that was the idea for the first pyramid. They had a brochure for it and they sent it to the printer in early 1991. But then there were some representatives for the National Cattlemen's Association, and they saw media coverage that this pyramid was going to stigmatize their products by putting beef in the same category as fats and dairy. So the National Cattlemen's Association, they joined up with all of these other industry groups, the National Milk Producers Federation, and they started protesting the pyramid, and the rollout of it was postponed. They said, you need to do more research. Who funds research? Who funds a lot of these researches? We're going to get into some of that when we talk about other conspiracy theories later in this episode. But basically, the pyramid then, it wasn't released. It went through another year of revisions at a cost of about $900,000, taxpayer money, of course. And then when the new version came out to the public in 1992, the original nutrition experts, like all of these scientists who were behind the first guide, they were like, wait a minute, what the fuck? It's completely different. The suggested servings of grains were way higher. The recommended number of servings of fruits and vegetables had shrunk. What was also interesting was that they did some like shading, some shadow work. So that way the milk section was the easiest to see out of the six sections on the pyramid. They did all of these focus tests. And when you look at the pyramid, the first thing your eye was drawn to was always the milk section. It was also interesting because, right, when you're talking about milk, like, are you talking about protein? Are you talking about calcium? I think there might be vitamin D in milk. I'm not positive. Anyway, what are you doing? Why are you putting milk as its entire own group and implying that it's part of an essential healthy diet? You know, keep in mind, some people are allergic to dairy. My neighbor is, right? Like, some people are lactose intolerant. Fucking put your hands up. I know I am. Or what about the number of different cultures who historically consume very little, if any, dairy products at all? So one of the original scientists who developed the first food pyramid actually spoke out about this. His thoughts are really interesting. His name is Louise Light. He said that when the version of the food guide came back to us revised, they were all really, really shocked. And he said, I later discovered the wholesale changes made to the guide by the Office of the Secretary of Agriculture were calculated to win the acceptance of the food industry. And check this out. They say the Agricultural Secretary's office, they altered the wording. That was one of the things that they changed, along with the shading and also the entire percentages. So they changed the wording to emphasize processed food over fresh and whole foods. They tried to downplay lean meat and low-fat dairy choices because the milk and the meat dairy lobbies, they were really upset. And they thought that if you say, oh my God, have lean meat and low-fat dairy, it's going to hurt our sales of full-fat products. So they had to take that out. Then they also massively increased the servings of wheat and other grains so that way they could make the wheat growers happy. And then the meat lobby got the final word on the color of everything, the saturated fat and the cholesterol guideline. So they changed that guideline from red to purple because they thought psychologically the red color would make people think, ooh, that's bad, like bad fat, red meat. They didn't want that association, so they changed it to purple. Now, the original USDA nutritionists, they called for a base of 5 to 9 servings of fresh fruit a day. With this new pyramid, it was replaced to 2 to 3 servings. The original recommendation of whole grain breads and cereals was 3 to 4 servings. They fucking bumped that up to 6 to 11 servings. And this scientist goes on record and he's like, one of the things that really shocked me and my nutritionist group is that we had the category of baked goods. So anything made with white flour, crackers, sweets, all of these like baked goods, we had that at the very top of our pyramid and we recommended that they be eat sparingly. But in this new guide that came out to the public, that category was part of the fucking base of the pyramid. And like I said, they also changed the wording from eat less to avoid too much, which kind of gave a nod to the processed food industry by not limiting, you know, junk food and processed food. Oh, you don't need to limit it, just like, you know, avoid too much, but you can still indulge. And even though they put that out with the very neutral wording, there was a bunch of responses from the food industry and, you know, all of the people in Congress who are basically in their pocket, and they threw a fit. There was this firestorm of really angry responses when the pyramid came out because they thought that the government should not be telling the public to eat less of anything, including saturated fat, cholesterol, meat, eggs, sugar. They were like, don't you dare tell anyone to eat less of any category. And the guideline also had these insane, this, you know, scientist is saying here, the guidelines include meaningless, even deceptive recommendations like choose carbohydrates wisely for good health. But is a breakfast cereal that's 38% sugar a wise choice? And choose fats wisely for good health. But are fast food French fries cooked in that artery clogging vegetable oil a wise choice? So the wording that they used around this is like really fascinating. And then the scientist says here, he says, how and why does the government allow this to happen? As I learned from my days as a USDA nutritionist, nutrition for the government is primarily a marketing tool to fuel growth in consumer food expenditures and demand for major food commodities, meat, dairy, eggs, wheat. It's an economics lesson that has very little to do with our health and nutrition and everything to do with making sure that food expenditures continue to rise for all interests involved in the food industry. And I feel like that like summary there, that paragraph that he has, that's kind of why I advocate for conspiracy theories. And once again, like I'll say it until I'm blue in the face, not all, hashtag not all conspiracy theories. But I just find that there's so many people in this world who, you know, I understand being a little adverse to the phrase conspiracy theory because of what it means nowadays. But then I feel like it's creating this entire group of people who are very like academic and like, I know better than you because like, I don't listen to rumors and old wives tales. I'm getting my news directly from the government and government agencies. All they care about is money. Is you spending your money? Is you putting it back into the economy? Is you funding their programs? I just really do truly believe the government does not care about you. You are a tool to them. They want to squeeze things out of you. I mean, this entire, you know, humbug with the food pyramid is an exact example of that. So even when you think about your choices, right? Like, let's say you're at the supermarket and you think, oh, I'm making a choice. I'm picking this up. I'm choosing the items on the shelves. I'm, you know, dropping them into my basket. Although, have you noticed that some grocery stores, they're taking away the baskets at the grocery stores so that way you can only have a shopping cart because they're trying to get you to buy more. Mm-hmm. Yeah, some of the King Supers here in Denver are doing it and people are freaking out. They're like, give me back my fucking basket, you bitch. Like everybody's just so fed up, you know? Anyway, but when you put those items in the supermarket into your now cart, no longer basket, you think that you're making a decision, but we've already been influenced for years by the government, different programs, marketing tools, sheets, companies that they fund, that prop up, that then pay lobbyists and are inside Congress. And then it's also freaky too, because you're like, okay, well, maybe if I can't trust that, what about my doctor? And I feel like nobody trusts their doctor nowadays. So it's also this really hairy situation because you don't want to trust nobody. You don't want to only listen to the internet. But, you know, when you follow the money, it just kind of seems like everybody's out for the best buck. Now, just because I sometimes, you know, I hear about stuff like this and I'm like, oh my God, it's so depressing. Like, what can we do? I think a really optimistic, fun, encouraging thing that does exist is your intuition and your own tracking. Each person's body is very different too, which is why I find that a lot of food rules, right? Like we were saying, having milk as a category in the food pyramid, my butthole would never close. Like there's just some people that food pyramid would not apply to. So there aren't really hard and fast rules. But I think it's really encouraging and self-empowering that people can do things like the elimination diet to see what foods agree and disagree with you. You can track calories of food to have like a better idea of what each food item contains. You can see yourself what foods agree and disagree with you, right? Like sometimes eggs don't agree with me first thing in the morning. Sometimes I'm starving the week before my period and I'm not hungry at all when I'm on it. So I know that parts of this episode are like a little bit freaky and depressing, but I think it's really encouraging to think that we can, at least in a micro way, find things that work for us and be really confident in those results. Okay, so anyway, back to what the scientist was saying. He continues on to talk about how the USDA has had this very long and cozy relationship with the food industry, and a lot of food industry executives, somehow end up in USDA leadership positions. There was this guy who was on the National Pork Producers Council, and he found his way into the USDA at a leadership position. There were even a bunch of consumer groups that requested, unsuccessfully, that 7 of the 13 panel members who were writing the food guidelines be removed because of their close ties to the industry, and they were unsuccessful with that. He goes on to say that agriculture is among the top 10 industries that spend the most on lobbying efforts. And I like his recommendation at the end. He basically says, because of everything that's going on, because we have this national nutrition crisis, it's really vital that the government gives state-of-the-art nutrition advice that is not bogged down by special interests. So he, the scientist, suggests that the responsibility be moved to the Department of Health and Human Services, where that way nutritionists don't have ties to the food industry and officials would be less likely to kind of knuckle under the pressure from these food lobbies. This part of the episode is actually sponsored by me, myself, and I. I don't know if you know, but Fluently Forward has a bunch of different items other than the podcast. So if you're looking for a way to support the show, come and check out some things that you can buy and it can be of benefit to you. So one of the things I want to talk about, I talk about it a bit over on Instagram, we have a breakup ebook. So if you have recently gone through a breakup, you go to fluentlyforward.com/breakup and you can check out this 96-page ebook that I made. It is filled with chapters. I basically took all of the breakups in my life, my friend's life, all of my different therapy recommendations, and I put all of them into one huge, almost 100-page ebook. So if you're going through a breakup and you don't know where to start, you don't know what foods to be eating because maybe you don't have an appetite, maybe you want to get the CBT advice that my therapist gave me, but you can get it for a much, much cheaper rate. The ebook is $8. It has tons of homework, exercises, fun quizzes, kind of like an old school 17 magazine, different ways that you can use ChatGPT to help with your breakup, like all of these cool hacks that I've gathered from over the years. And I just wanted to put it in one spot. I will give you my top recommendation. The minute you get broken up with after you go no contact, change your iPhone case and your screensaver, like the wallpaper on your iPhone. The way that that will kind of reset your phone and you won't have any of those connections anymore, because typically, you know, when you look at your phone and you're dating someone, each time you see that shade of color as your iPhone case, or maybe you see a wallpaper photo or something, in your mind, you associate those images and those color shades with getting a text from your ex or a FaceTime from them or connection with them. So now that you're not going to be in contact with them anymore, get rid of things that could kind of subconsciously make you think of communication from them. So that book has a ton of great hacks like that. And if you go to fluentlyforward.com/merch, we have tons of different merch options available with different slogans on them. Hello, hello, very much in love, floozy. And these are all upcycled pieces and they're all different. So you can get different denim jackets. You can get different pastel plaid button downs, short sleeves for the hot weather that's coming up. Just go check out fluentlyforward.com/merch. There's a ton of cool, different, unique options on there for anything that you want. All right, without further ado, back to the show. All right, so let's talk about another cool kind of food conspiracy. And this one is a little bit woo-woo, which I like. It's semi-placebo related. And these are the different studies that have been done about how your thoughts and your stress while eating food means that the food will have a different effect on your body based on the mindset that you're in when you are eating it. So this was, if you guys remember, we did a public episode here. It was all about manifestation and the placebo effect. And we did it with a floozy, Dr. Ryan Lynn Brown. It was a great episode. I love having somebody who actually knows their shit to balance me out. You know what I mean? Because I'll be like, ooh, what about this? And they'll be like, actually, if you look at the statistical significance of the study, et cetera, here's what it means. But this was something that I really wanted to look into because, you know, it's not only the food that we eat and we're putting into our bodies, the fact that the scenario you could be in while you eat that food has a different impact on you is really interesting. And I know that here in America, the way we eat is so different from the way that other cultures eat. Like we eat in the car. We're like shoving food into our mouth. We're eating on the go. We're doing the drive-throughs, all of that. I feel like, you know, at least in European cultures, you sit down, like you take time for your lunch, you eat it with other people. We are always eating in front of a screen and we're shoveling frozen stuff into our mouth. Honestly, when I think about it, it's horrible. It's horrible. It's horrible and I do it every day. I don't know if you guys have seen those different jokes on TikTok where people are like, you know, I can't eat my food until I find the right YouTube video to watch while I eat it. And then someone compared it to medieval times, like, I need my court jester. Like, I need my entertainment while I eat my meal. And back in the day, right, that used to be the court jester and the performances while you ate your feast in the grand hall. And now it's just me sitting at my kitchen island with YouTube propped up. But like, I don't know what it is. I always eat with a screen in front of me. It's horrible. So anyway, in this old episode, Dr. Ryan Brown and I, we talked about this milkshake study. And this was basically, there is this gut peptide that looks like it's called ghrelin, but apparently it's kind of pronounced like gremlin. And that is one of the things that can determine whether or how hungry you are, like if you feel hungry, if you don't feel hungry. So they had two different groups of participants, and they were going to be consuming a 380-calorie milkshake. They told one group of people, this is a sensible milkshake. It's 140 calories. It's a light milkshake. It's really sensible. It's really good for you. They told the other group of participants, this is a 620-calorie indulgent shake. This is going to be heavy. Like, this is going to sit in your stomach. So these two different groups went in with different ideas, and then they measured this gut peptide before in an anticipatory stage, and then afterwards. And they noticed a difference that the people who were being told that they had this indulgent milkshake, the gut peptide said, I'm way more full than the people who said I had this light, healthy milkshake. So then they were trying to say, can we basically prove that if you think you're eating something calorie dense, you will become more full? Like, you can kind of placebo effect and change your mind into thinking, wow, that really filled me up. You know, some people are making jokes on the internet. Ooh, could I just eat celery, but tell myself I'm eating mozzarella sticks and then see if I'm, you know, see if I'm less hungry after something like that. So anyway, Dr. Ryan Brown took a look at this and she just says a lot of people, you know, raise their eyebrow at this milkshake study. There's a lot of different things, right? Like, there could be people with undiagnosed anorexia or restrictive eating patterns who are in that sample. It also doesn't really seem statistically significant, but she did tell us about a really cool study that looks at how daily stress affects how our bodies respond to different types of meals. And this was a study that they did with women, which I love because I feel like most studies are usually done with men. So they were measuring all of these different things. Okay. Do I know a lot about them? No. Okay. It's like a C-reactive protein, intercellular adhesion molecules, whatever. Like, they were measuring all of these different factors in a woman's body. And they were measuring her, you know, if she had a day with no stress, and she ate a meal, how that reacted to her body, and if she had a day with tons of stress, and then she ate a meal, how that reacted. And what they found was that the women who had been stressed and then ate a meal, all of these different things that they measured were heightened. So even though they were having a sunflower oil meal, if they were stressed the prior day, they ate that meal, and their responses looked like they were having a saturated fat meal. So this was a study that basically shows that stress can heighten inflammatory responses and kind of influence how our meals affect us, which is both interesting and really cool. And then also, like, I'm already stressed out because now when I'm stressed and I eat, I'm going to be stressed that the stress is making my body stress out even more, you know? So I don't know what the answer is. Like, now when I'm stressed, maybe when I eat food, I'm going to, like, the YouTube video I put on, it'll be like 10-minute meditation, relaxation, spa center. I don't know what the answer is, but it's cool that we're learning about stuff like this. Today's episode is brought to you by Way, Way Hair Care. We all know how time-consuming it is to style your hair. For me, I actually take the time to watch 45-minute Ugly Betty episodes each time I straighten my hair because that's how long it takes. So if you want a little bit of time back in your day and to feel good about your hair, check out Way's new anti-frizz cream. It has this incredible North Bondi scent, and it also helps with heat damage, which I feel like all of us are basically using heat on our hair at this point. You can also check out some more of Way's bestsellers. They have a leave-in conditioner that also fights frizz. They have an incredible detox shampoo. I see everybody using this on TikTok. Detox shampoo, it's like the new thing. I thought that I had a, you know, messed up scalp until I started using it. And they have hair oil and that beautiful hair gloss that I've talked about before. So you can frizz-free up your schedule with Way. Go to theouai.com and enter the promo code Fluently. You'll get 15% off any product. That's theouai.com with the promo code Fluently. All right, so now let's dive into this conspiracy theory around celebrities and nightshades. And this is something really interesting. You've probably heard back when Giselle and Tom Brady were together, you know, rip to that. But they had very intense diets, obviously. He's like one of the best football players in the world. She's a supermodel. They're going to be eating unique stuff. Basically, their personal chef, Alan Campbell, he did an interview with this media outlet and he told them that their diet is 80% vegetables and whole grains and then 20% lean meats and fish. And he said Tom doesn't eat nightshades because they're not anti-inflammatory. So no tomatoes, peppers, mushrooms, or eggplants. Tomatoes trickle in every now and then, but maybe just once a month. And then hours after that article went wide, everybody started searching on Google for like nightshade vegetable. What is it? What is it? Now, who walks us through this and breaks it down? But Harley Pasternak is going to be our source for this section. And Harley Pasternak, you probably remember him because he is Kanye West's ex-personal trainer. And he is the personal trainer that Kanye West basically was like, this man's trying to kill me. He was like, this man is trying to drug me and get me medicated and send me off to a facility. And then he released text messages between him and Harley. And Harley was like, you either come with us and you do this, or we're going to drug you out and take you to zombie land again. You remember how much you didn't like that the last time. Like, you'll never see your kids again. Really creepy stuff. And Harley trains everyone. First of all, I've been noticing that he trains Ariel Lore, the influencer. She's hot, so it works. But anyway, he has trained literally every famous celebrity ever. And Christy and I did a Patreon episode all about him and his relationship to Kanye West. And, you know, basically, is this guy an MK Ultra agent or not? We came to the conclusion that he's not, but the text messages were really fucking weird. So anyway, you can check that out on Patreon if you want. So he kind of did an article with people and he breaks down how bad nightshades are or aren't. So the nightshade family of plants is huge and it does have some kind of creepy plants in it. Atropa belladonna, it's commonly known as belladonna or deadly nightshade, and that has been used as a poison ever since the Middle Ages. So there are kind of creepy plants in this nightshade family. But you know what comes from the same family? The potato and the tomato. Potato, patata. Anyway, so they also come from this family, and obviously that's completely fine to eat. And you know what else comes from the family? Peppers, eggplant, tobacco, the trendy goji berry. So Harley was saying that each plant has a different alkaloid, which are these naturally occurring chemical compounds that most scientists believe are a byproduct of metabolism. So in the nightshade family, that alkaloid level varies a lot with each species. Like we said, the deadly nightshade, super, super toxic, but the amount of alkaloids that are in tomatoes, potatoes, not toxic. I am interested in how mushrooms are part of this family. I'm not trying to, you know, throw the Patreon at anyone. I just say it so that way you don't spend the time looking it up as a public episode and then you don't see it. But Emily Rose and I did a Patreon episode all about mushrooms. Creepy little fuckers, but they also might save the planet. For anyone who has not watched the documentary Fantastic Fungi, I cried 3 times watching it. I know it was a documentary about mushrooms. Like, they are incredible. They are everywhere. Did you know that certain types of mushrooms, they can digest plastic? And they're also sometimes used in oil spills. They eat up the oil. Like, there's these incredible things that they can do. They're also deeply sinister sometimes. I'm fascinated by mushrooms. Anyway, so back to nightshades. There is some research that says if you regularly eat plants in the nightshade family, it can cause inflammation, which could maybe lead to joint pain, you know, irritable bowel disease, nothing definitive, but it really varies from person to person. Basically, people who are already struggling with joint pain, they have anecdotally said, when I eat some of these items in the nightshade family, my joint pain gets a lot worse. So it's only problematic for a really small number of people. It's just, you know, you can tell yourself if it is. And it's good to test it out for yourself because the nightshade family also is a really good source of antioxidants, which ironically enough, help reduce inflammation. So you can't really assume the worst about them, but you also can't assume the best. So they basically say, ask yourself some questions, right? Do you regularly eat a lot of vegetables and fruits in the nightshade family? If you do, Do you have bad symptoms? Stomach cramps, diarrhea, vomiting, headaches, dizziness, etc. And then he basically ends and says, to be on the safe side, never eat potatoes with the sprouting eyes or a greenish tint, because that means that they're higher in solanine and they might be poisonous by that point. And by accounts though, he says like, if you're going to get a reaction, like a poisonous reaction from these nightshades, it's a lot. You would have to eat more than 2 pounds of green tomatoes to elicit any kind of dangerous reaction. He also says too, as a last note, this is unlikely, but if you have a garden and there are potato and tomato leaves and vines from the garden, you're probably not eating the leaves and vines anyway, but it's better to just avoid eating them because they're going to be also higher in these alkaloids. So are nightshades something that you should avoid? Does Tom Brady and does, you know, Giselle know something that we don't? It seems like it's not a beauty secret type of thing. It just seems like some individuals react poorly to them. So when in doubt, take them out. I personally love anecdotal stories. I really do. I also listen to my doctor and, you know, I read what I'm supposed to read, but anecdotal stories to me are just so effing helpful. And you know what else is helpful? The reason why, like, I swear to God, like I should be in charge of things. Like, here's the thing. My mom told me that she found out like a few years ago, you know, you take Advil, we've all been taking Advil or ibuprofen for years. And you know how on the back it says, drink with a full glass of water. Do you know why they say that? What the fuck? They need to be including the sentence. They say that because when you drink it with a full glass of water, it starts working quicker. So that's why they say drink with a full glass of water. Now, if we knew that, and obviously you have a raging headache, so you pop an Advil, wouldn't you obviously drink the full glass of water because you want it to, you know, kick in quicker? Why don't they put that extra sentence on the label? Like, why don't they educate us? Like, help me help you. And I remember when I got my nose job back in, I think like 2018, I was taking this thing called bromelain. And bromelain, I think, is like this enzyme or protein. It's something found in pineapple, but not the fun part of pineapple. No, not the fruit, not the juice. It's in the stalk of the pineapple. And it really helps, I think, with like bruising or swelling. I think swelling. Yeah, arnica helps with bruising. And I think bromelain helps with the swelling, I believe. So I bought a bunch of bromelain pills and I was like, great, I look insane. I'm going to take this bromelain pill. So I take the pill and my cast is off at this point. By the way, if you ever Google fluently forward nose job, you'll get a real treat. Like, I looked busted after it because you're so swollen and you're so bruised for like, I don't know, like a good month, 3 months. Honestly, I didn't feel good until like 6 months after. Like, you're really bruised. And my parents were with me and they said, you know what, Shannon, like, you've been at home for like 2 weeks, not going out because like you don't like how you look. I was living in San Francisco. They were like, let's drive to Carmel by the sea. I always mix it up. And I was like, fun. What a fun, beautiful place. We'll go, we'll walk around, we'll drive back, whatever. Dude, there's this hilarious story about when we got the car, but I'll tell it another time. Anyway, so I take my bromelain pill and we drive down and I realize halfway through the drive, I am going to shit my pants out. Like, my stomach is like, it's war going on in there. So I remember we drive into a strip mall and I run into a PF Chang's and I have like the worst diarrhea I've ever had in my life. And then this moment happens, you know, oh my God, you know, when you're having diarrhea in a public bathroom and you want to die and a mom and her child came in and you know how kids don't have that filter. Like, they don't know what manners are. They just say what's on their mind. I remember the girl came in and she was like, mommy, it smells awful in here. Like, what is that? Like, it smells so bad. And me with like my huge nose, like all puffy, all swollen, like literally having the worst time of my life in a PF Chang's. I like did that thing where like you raise your feet up so that way it looks like no one was in there. I was like, I want to die in a PF Chang's. And then I went home and I Googled it and they said, oh, no. The reason why you're supposed to drink the full glass of water after is because you'll get diarrhea if you don't. You couldn't have put that one sentence on and saved me from a traumatic experience. Like, I just don't understand why these companies don't let us in on it. Anyway, but that's to say, you know how you're supposed to rinse your beans before, you know, like if you get beans in a can, black beans, you're supposed to give them a rinse and get all that gunk off of them before you cook with them. Do you want to know why? Because that's the stuff that makes you fart. I don't know if that one's true. Someone told it to me though, and I always rinse my beans because of it. I wouldn't trust me on that. No, I would. Trust me. Rinse your beans. Don't fart. Okay, let's get into our next conspiracy theory here. I want to talk about junk food in the US versus the UK. It is fascinating, and a lot of this information was grabbed from a book called Feeding You Lies, How to Unravel the Food Industry's Playbook and Reclaim Your Health by Vani Hari. So they say they spent years investigating the differences between European and American food products, and what they found was absolutely disgusting. So apparently a college buddy of, I'm just going to read, you know, the direct text here. A college buddy of mine decided to go live in London for a few years. While she was there, I often had her go to Tesco and other European grocery stores to take photos of the ingredient lists of boxes of products. And then I would compare them to the same brand of American products, and it was completely different ingredients. Here's six that she highlights. One, McDonald's French fries. So they make their iconic French fries in the UK with a few ingredients: potatoes, oil, dextrose, salt. That's it. In the US, they're made with, quote, natural beef flavor, sodium acid furosemide. They are fried in an oil that is laced with this anti-foaming agent, dimethylpolysiloxane. Whatever. I'm just not going to be able to pronounce it. And do you want to know what that is? That's the main ingredient that's found in Silly Putty. And it's in our US fries, but not in the UK ones. And she makes a good point. She says, well, if they figured out a way to cook their fries without all of the extra ingredients overseas, why aren't we doing the same thing here? The next thing that she compared, Quaker instant oatmeal packets. The Quaker oats, strawberries, and cream in the US, it has zero strawberries in it. They mimic the look and the taste of real strawberries by using flavored and colored fruit pieces comprised of dehydrated apples, artificial strawberry flavor, citric acid, and of course, red dye 40. It's a total scam. And then the UK Quaker doesn't even sell that shit. But what they do have is a similar product called Oat So Simple, and that has real strawberries in it, which is just like insane. Mountain Dew, this one was very interesting. So Mountain Dew in the UK gets the bright yellow color by beta carotene. This is a natural color that's derived from carrots and other plants. If you've seen any of those viral TikTok videos, a lot of people are eating like tons of carrots and sweet potato and pumpkin because it gives your skin kind of like a healthy glow from the inside out. So that's how they color it in the UK, but PepsiCo selling Mountain Dew here in America, instead of using natural colors to give it that look, we use the petroleum-based dye called Yellow Number 5. You know what else is also in the US Mountain Dew? Something called BVO. BV, no, I'm just kidding. Brominated vegetable oil. And that is an ingredient that was fucking banned in Europe. Now, I will say here in the US, back in 2014, there was this activist, Sarah Kavanaugh, and she announced that they would remove, like she worked with PepsiCo and said, you need to remove BVO from all of your American drinks. And they did for everyone except fucking Mountain Dew. Heinz ketchup, also different in both places. In the UK, it is GMO-free, but in the US, it's full of GMOs and high fructose corn syrup. Also, a lab-produced, quote, natural flavoring. And we're going to get into what natural flavoring really means later on in the episode. So, you know, if you're ever dipping your fries into ketchup and you're like, why can I not stop eating this? Just think about that. Now, Doritos, over in the UK and overseas, they don't use artificial dyes for Dorito. They use paprika extract and something called annatto. And of course, how do you color the Doritos here in the good old US of A? Red number 40, blue number 1, and yellow number 5. It's just insane that we're eating all of these things that are like color number combinations. And what's really interesting too, you know, I'm allergic to peanuts. A lot of my friends are. My boyfriend is allergic to food dye, specifically red food dye and blue food dye, which I just never heard of anyone being allergic to it before I met him. And I'm like, that's really interesting. And also kind of like your body looking out for you. Like you shouldn't be eating anything with all of those dyes in it. Now, this is what fucking shook me to my core. This is, you know, sometimes certain phrases get my conspiracy brain churning and my conspiracy heart twice its normal size. She says, why don't these companies just sell the same, safer products everywhere? I'll tell you why. Europe takes a precautionary principle towards food additives that are potentially risky. They ban or add warning labels to these additives for their citizens. The US takes the opposite approach. They don't remove additives from our food supply until they have been proven dangerous, which can take a very long time and a lot of red tape. That means that Americans are literally the lab rats. The US government allows food companies to largely police itself, which, you know, deciding which ingredients, chemicals, and additives are safe to use in their products. Because if a company can get away with using a cheaper ingredient, they will. Given the choice, they will always opt for the cheaper flavor enhancer, the cheaper color additive, and the cheaper preservative, the cheaper GMO ingredient, even if all of these cheaper alternatives have a negative impact on our health. The truth is that nobody is watching out for us. When they tell you that they know that their processed foods are safe, they're telling you a lie. And isn't that just like, honestly, it makes me want to like import all of my snack food from Europe or something. That idea of Americans being the lab rats, and then also how that ties into our healthcare system. Because, you know, if you're in a place where the government pays for your health, of course they're not going to want to add cheap shit in that could then get you sick and then they have to pay for all of your bills for your health. But here in the US, when they don't have to pay for your health, of course they're going to push out and test all of this shit on us. And once again, you know, there's all of these anecdotal stories, millions of anecdotal stories that I've heard. Seriously, I lost weight eating anything that I wanted for 2 weeks in Europe. America loves to keep us sick. Can confirm, I lived in Italy and I ate pasta and pizza pretty much every day and I drank like a fish, but I lost weight. When I got back to the States within a few weeks, I had gained back the 10 pounds that I lost. Now, a lot of people also chalk this up to how European cities are a lot more walkable, and they definitely are. I think that is a good point. I don't know what it is, but they're just, you know, there's too many weird stories for there not to be something going on here. And another great point as well is for makeup and skincare. There are so many different regulations that are placed on other countries when it comes to the creams that we're putting on this huge epidermis of our skin that then sinks in and goes into our body. And the US just lets it fly fucking free willy over here. And a lot of people have done, you know, my sister got one of those apps that you scan the barcode. And so did my friend Celia, where you scan the barcode and it tells you if this product, makeup or skincare, is safe to be putting in your skin. And my sister had to throw almost everything out. And she did this before she was pregnant too. And she was flabbergasted by the amount of stuff that was not safe to be using. And she said too, even some of the stuff that Sephora has as its like clean beauty, green line, that came back all negative in the app. And then this other comment, which was super true and kind of depressing, they say, what's even more fun? Try to eliminate sugar, high fructose, etc. from your diet. It's in everything. Like, why is it in saltines? In order to get away from it, you would have to triple your grocery bill to buy less processed food or ingredients. It's crazy that you can't even hope to eat healthy. Today's episode of Fluently Forward is brought to you by Pear Eyewear, and you can wear it too. We're talking about different musicians in this episode. Maybe you want to be a little bit like Bono and wear your sunglasses at night and everywhere you go, and you can do that very easily because Pear lets you basically snap on all of these different frames, and they also have sun tops. So as the weather is starting to get warmer, at least here in the States, you can just snap on their sun tops and have your sunglasses with you on the go in a bunch of different varieties, whatever personal style or color that you want. Also, this is just my tip to you. If you have allergies like I do, you should be wearing sunglasses because it protects from all the pollen and everything getting into your eyes. Anyway, that's just, I wear my sunglasses not to look cool, but to make sure my allergies are kept at bay. And you can do so fashionably with Pear's sun tops, the ultimate companion for long days on the go. So one pair gives you infinite possibilities. Go to Pear Eyewear and use code Shannon for 15% off your first pair and support the show by mentioning that Fluently Forward sent you in your post-checkout survey. That's PAIR eyewear.com with code Shannon. And this is what leads me into the next conspiracy that we are going to end on for today. Changing the name of high fructose corn syrup, which is incredible. So instead of taking high fructose corn syrup out of products, because we know it's bad for us, they have changed the name multiple different times. So what is high fructose corn syrup? It's a sweetener that's derived from corn syrup, which is processed from corn. Because what do we have a lot of here in America? Corn. And it's used to process, to sweeten these processed foods, these sodas, particularly in the US. It's kind of similar to regular table sugar, but it's composed of both fructose and glucose. And high fructose corn syrup became huge in the late 70s because regular sugar kind of cost a lot, but the government was subsidizing the corn industry. So corn prices were super, super low. So they found a way to turn it into high fructose corn syrup and make a lot of money out of it. So it skyrocketed between 1980 and 2000. Now it's kind of declined a little bit in recent years because we have a lot of artificial sweeteners that are coming onto the market. But anyway, high fructose corn syrup, it's still used in a lot of stuff. Now, there are different types of high fructose corn syrup. I didn't know about this. There's different types of them because there's different proportions of fructose. So you have high fructose corn syrup 90. It's just called HFCS 90. And that's the most concentrated form. So it has 90% of fructose. And then the rest is, you know, glucose, other sugars. Then you have HFCS 55. That's only 55% fructose and 42% glucose, other sugars. Now, high fructose, I'm just gonna call it high fructose. You know what I'm talking about. High fructose 55, that's used in a lot of soft drinks, sodas. High fructose 42, that's used in a lot of cereals, baked goods, processed foods. And what they have done is quietly and deceitfully renamed high fructose corn syrup based off of these different percentages of how much fructose is in the high fructose corn syrup. Now, the really freaky thing is that when I was researching this, different people were talking about it, and I clicked on about four different links to different articles that talked about this. All four of the first links I clicked on, and they were all different. It wasn't like the same URL. Oh, 404, not found. This website is available for purchase. They were all removed. The only way I was able to find this article was because somebody on Reddit linked it through the web archive, and that's how I could find it. So the article basically says high fructose corn syrup is a killer. Everybody knows it. Ever since humans started consuming it, obesity rates have more than tripled. Diabetes has increased more than sevenfold. And it's a huge cause of heart disease, obesity, cancer, dementia, liver failure, tooth decay, and more. So what has the FDA done about this? They go by a new name, quote, natural sweetener. Mm-hmm. And they also get away with other things by that proportion I was saying. So the General Mills Vanilla Chex, it's this updated version of Chex Mix. You can find it at like most grocery and discount stores, whatever. The front of the box says the product has no high fructose corn syrup. But then when you turn it over and you read the ingredient list, there it fucking is, the new isolated fructose. So it would only have like 55% fructose instead of 90. So that's why they say there's no fructose corn syrup. So now syrups that have 90% fructose, they don't state high fructose corn syrup on the label anymore. They just say fructose or fructose syrup. They were even trying, this thankfully wasn't passed, but they were trying for a while to get the phrase corn syrup to be used instead, because I feel like people are just like, corn, corn, like it grows from the earth, you know, it's a healthy vegetable, whatever, whatever. Not at all. It's just so fucking insidious. And so many times, I can't tell you how many times, because I try to look at the ingredients of what food I buy. Natural sweetener is always on there. And the fact that you can technically say that and it could be high fructose corn syrup is fucking infuriating. So anyway, now I just want to end on a little bit of a positive note and some cool, fun things that you can do with food, because for me myself, I don't know how you're feeling when you listen to this, but when I listen to this, I just kind of think to myself, I'm like, well, we're fucked. Like, what am I going to do? Like, if, am I going to hand make ketchup? Every ketchup that I buy is going to have like high fructose corn syrup in it, or like food coloring. Like, what can I do? So I just want to end with some hopeful, optimistic things. Two things, two snacks that I've started making. My boyfriend's an incredible chef, so I've learned a lot of cooking things from him. And these are two snacks that he makes that are so easy, and I'm going to share them with you. I'll also post like little videos of them on Instagram and TikTok this week. Number one, zhuzhing up your hummus is incredible. You get hummus from the grocery store, right? You try to get it with the most natural ingredients you can. Open that up, rip out the plastic lid, take the back of a spoon and kind of make a little ripple like an ocean in it. then drizzle olive oil around it, get some big ass flaky salt, and then a Middle Eastern spice blend. And you put that over it, and all of a sudden, boom, it's like restaurant hummus. And the big salt in it, it makes you want to keep dipping vegetables into it and eating it, which is so good. The other thing he does, and these are great to serve as like, I don't know, like appetizers if someone's coming over and you want to be healthy. Take a cucumber, an English cucumber, and cut it up into these thin slices and scrape off the peel on the outside. Put them in a bowl, salt them pretty heavily, and then you squeeze lemon juice over it. And the way it tastes like this sweet, salty snack with a crunch, like I normally do not like eating healthy, but I will go crazy for those two snacks. It's incredible. Somebody else that I like to follow for food on Instagram, New Earth Mama. She eats mostly vegan and she just has these incredible recipes because I am also lazy to my core. And I just feel like, well, here's the thing. We're not lazy. We're exhausted. Okay. You get home from working 8 hours a day. Of course you don't want to whip up like a giant roast chicken. Of course you don't. Anyone who does, like, shout out to you, but like we are also tired at the end of the day. So it's not laziness. I don't want to blame any of us. But yeah, lazy meals are some of my favorites. So I'm also just going to shout out some of these because I just like inspiration, right? Like Xander taught me those two snacks. I make them all the time. It's just because I'm not creative enough to think of it. So from New Earth Mama, what I learned from her, veggie mash. You just boil your potatoes in water, right? Mash them up, a little bit of butter, maybe a little bit of milk. And then you get frozen veggies. Sometimes I boil them at the same time as the mashed potatoes. So I keep it all in one pot. And then you mash all of that together. So now you have mashed potatoes, but inside little bits of corn, carrots, peas, green beans. And then that way you get a good crunch as you eat each of the mashed potatoes. I really like making that. Ariel Lore, I shouted her out. I follow her. That's how I know that Harley Pasternak, the trainer, is training her. Every time she cooks rice, she cooks it in bone broth instead of water to add some more protein and flavor to it. And I think that's a great hack that I now do. Nutritional yeast. This is something that I found when I was vegan to get a lot of good nutrients and vitamins. Just drizzle that over your popcorn, or sometimes I like to make green peas. I love peas. Just nutritional yeast and salt them. Eat it like it's popcorn. Just something to shovel into your mouth while you're watching a TV show. Another good thing, following people who cook meals for their kids, the way that you can kind of add extra nutrients into stuff, because I'm not big on taking stuff out of your diet. I'm really big on adding stuff in that's good. The way that you can use blenders or immersion blenders to make pasta sauces that are 90% vegetable, instead of pesto, look up Piesto, and that's a much healthier version of pesto. Instead of marinara sauce, you can fully immersion blend all of these great vegetables and get them in there for the sauce because, you know, you still want to have pasta. When I was vegan, there was this mac and cheese I made and I found it on BuzzFeed. It was incredible. The cheese sauce was made out of soaked cashews, boiled potato, carrots, onions, garlic pepper, onion pepper, salt, nutritional yeast. You blend it up. It tastes exactly like cheese for a vegan mac and cheese. And the benefit is you shit your brains out 1 hour later, not in like a bad way, in like a good way. It helps the system. And just be a little bit wary. The more I look into the food pyramid, the different industries that are subsidized by our government, and it's not just that they're subsidizing them, it's that they're then doing marketing on the back end to make us buy more of that thing. It's just very fascinating, very interesting to me. So please let me know what you think. You know, did you remember the food pyramid growing up? Have you heard already that high fructose corn syrup goes by a bunch of different names? When you eat nightshades, does that affect you? Does it not? And have you heard of the milkshake study and this idea of how stress impacts the food that we eat based on whether or not we're stressed? So as always, thank you for hanging out with me. And if you want to listen to any of the Patreon episodes we mentioned in here, I think we had that great one on mushrooms, the Harley Pasternak one. I did one with Christy on trending topics and a little Zendaya deep dive last week. Go check that out on patreon.com/fluentlyforward. So thanks for hanging out with me. I will see you next week for another episode. Bye, guys.